just help the countries that have oil and lots of money. That, afraid, is the way of the world. Tomorrow, I debate Republican Mike Lingham. I'm going to take him on these issues. The Indiana Supreme Court decision, you bet, will be among them. Don't miss that show tomorrow. Now, next up is Bob Kincaid, your hillbilly elitist. For now, this is Mark Levine, signing off.
Cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hot diggity, we've got a brand shiny new spanking week to play with. And it's going to be an interesting week, too. On Wednesday, I'll be on the road. We'll be doing the show live from the campus of West Virginia State University in Institute, West Virginia. Ray McGovern will be addressing the Seneca 2 group with his with their lecture series, and we'll broadcast it live to the world. We'll also shoot some video, and we'll have audio of the event. Maybe even get Mr. McGovern to sit down with us for a little conversation after the event itself. Wouldn't that be fun? I think it would. So that's what's coming up this week. Make sure you're tuned in on Wednesday, but I'd like it if you're tuned in on Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday as well. And for heaven's sakes, don't touch that mouse. We've got 3 hours of conversation and your expertise on the way right now. Now, you know, if you're familiar with the program, that I live precisely 2 miles from the geographic center of the middle of nowhere. Nonetheless, you'd be surprised at the people who stop at our door. We are regularly beset, among other things, by the Jehovah's Witnesses. So imagine my surprise when I heard a knock at the door earlier today. And I answered the door, and there stood a swarthy-looking character, all done up in robes, the mustache, who introduced himself as Muhammad Abdul Ahmed Jalal of Al-Qaeda, and he wanted to encourage me to vote Democratic in the upcoming primaries and general election. Yes, 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 yes. No kidding. That's right. The Islamofascists are campaigning for the Democratic Party. And imagine my surprise when I came back in and I looked at this story. And lo and behold, there it is. A quote from Willard Mitt Romney. He says, I think Barack Obama was more of a blank sheet. I think the primary revealed more about him than perhaps he would have liked. The recent endorsement by Hamas of his candidacy is, I think, the kind of development which people find revealing. I think he's said in his first year he would be inclined to visit with Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, Kim Jong-il, Fidel Castro. I think they find that appealing. Yeah. Of course, John, the McCain-Churian McCain-didate, McCain, 894th out of 899 in his graduating class at Annapolis, told conservative bloggers this past Friday, it's very clear who Hamas wants to be the next president of the United States. Consequently, the guy on my porch. Yes, yes. The terrorists are out there actively campaigning for the Democratic slate in the primary and the general election. What a bunch of loonies. Honest to God. You know, I was about to say, can we get through an election season without these fascist bastards from the right wing trying to say that my God, if there was still a Soviet Union, they'd swear up and down that the Soviet Comintern was, well, they're hoping the Democrats win. The commies want the This is how morally and ethically bankrupt and bereft the right wing is. This is how utterly devoid of any substantive solutions to America's problems the Republican Party truly is. They're down to this already. I mean, it ain't May, and they're down to this already. The recent endorsement by Hamas of his candidacy is, I think, the kind of development which people find... Oh, go get it. Go get your hair set or something, Willard. Then, what was it, earlier this month, there was Flush Flemball. My friends, the Islamo-fascists are actually campaigning for the election of Democrats. And then there was John Bolton. The life support system for a really big, ugly porn stash. Who said, the mullahs in Tehran want the Democrats to win. You know, if you didn't know better, you'd swear that we really had liberals running or something. Of course, we don't. There's no liberal running for president of the United States. Moderate, 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 moderate. Tepid, 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 tepid. But better than John McCain. Because better than John McCain is a really low bar. Because the McCain-Churian McCain-didate is nuts. So, consequently, don't be surprised if a swarthy-looking man in white robes appears on your doorstep to encourage you to vote Democrat on behalf of Hamas, or Al-Qaeda, or Fatah, or pick a group. Jiminy Christmas. The things we have to put up with just to have an election. Not that everybody's going to get to vote in the election. If you just listened to Mark Levine for the last hour, you know that Indiana's voter ID law has been upheld by a gang of judicial thugs on the Supreme Court. Among that majority of thugs was, of course, Antonin Scalia, whose daddy was a card-carrying member of the Italian-American fascist organization. You know, to get into the organization, you had to pledge a loaf of loyalty to... did I just say loaf of loyalty? Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear. You had to pledge an oath of loyalty to Benito Mussolini. So all those years when little baby Scalia was still in the cradle, his daddy was going to meetings, sticking his hand in the air in the fascist salute, and pledging undying loyalty to Benito Mussolini. So it comes as no surprise to find that Benito Mussolini doesn't like the idea of people voting. So now that the Indiana voter ID law has been upheld, you can expect all kinds of shenanigans all over the country. Wherever right-wingers who despise people going to the polls and voting can be found in any sort of a majority. I fully expect to hear that by the end of the year, that by November, for instance, African-American voters in Alabama will be asked to sign their name with a ballpoint pen on a piece of wax paper. For those of you who have never tried, it's impossible. Or prove their literacy by reading a Chinese restaurant menu written in Mandarin. I don't know. Alabama? Maybe it'll be Mississippi. Not sure which. But this isn't the camel's nose under the tent. This is the camel's nose, the camel's ears, the camel's neck, and both humps, and nothing outside the tent left except maybe that weird little stubby tail they've got. Do they have a weird little stubby tail? You never think of a camel's tail. You always think of a camel's nose and his humps. But anyway, there won't be much camel left outside the tent because the Supreme Court of the United States has just invited the camel to come in and sit at the table and, well, you get the idea. No sense in elaborating. So that's where we start this evening. I saw this story over at Think Progress about the Democrats being endorsed by Hamas. And I wish sometimes that I could just look at this stuff and go, that isn't real. That it could not ever possibly be real in any... No, it's fake. It's dummy... No. But no, it's real. My friends, Islamofascists are actually campaigning for the election of Democrats. Can you just see him standing there? Hello? Hello? Obama 08, Hamas? Obama 08, Islamic Jihad? Obama 08, Obama 08, Al-Qaeda? Al-Qaeda says vote Obama. And Limbaugh can sit there in his multi-million dollar compound in Palm Beach, Florida, and call for riots in Denver this August. Not by inciting riots. That's a crime. Incitement to riot is a crime. But don't worry about it. Nobody will do anything about it because Rush Limbaugh, after all, I'm an entertainer. I'm not a political commentator. I'm an entertainer. So, you know, he's just being funny, just like, say, Jon Stewart's funny or Bill Maher's funny. Except... not funny. Because he's not funny. Nobody's going to lock him up. Nobody's going to throw away the key. Nobody's going to charge him with anything. Even though he is actively calling for riots on the city streets of Denver, Colorado next August. 24th. To the 28th. They didn't do anything to Bill O'Reilly when he suggested that he'd like to lynch Michelle Obama. They didn't do anything to, they don't do anything to any of these thugs because they always hide behind someone else's skirts. I'm an entertainer. Oh, let's see. Speaking of O'Reilly? Yeah, O'Reilly has decided... Well, I'll let you hear this for yourself. What a pig. What a bunch of pigs they all are. This is just mind-boggling what they get away with. Bill Moyers had the nerve to have Reverend Wright on his program. Well, Bill O'Reilly doesn't like that.
Hi, I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks for watching us tonight. The comeback of Reverend Jeremiah Wright, that is the subject of this evening's Talking Points memo. The nation's most controversial cleric says he is misunderstood.
What the hell is that? Talking Points memo. Can't these people just speak English? I mean, I play a little bit now and then. I do a little dialect, a little accent, but I don't say memo. What a bunch of weirdos.
And a victim of bad people like me. Speaking to far-left PBS guy Bill Moyers, Wright put forth his case, and Moyers apparently was in...
Far-left PBS guy Bill Moyers. Gee, O'Reilly, why can't you introduce him as ordained minister of the gospel of Jesus Christ, Bill Moyers? You wouldn't want your 92-year-old demographic that doesn't have the brains to pour rainwater out of a boot with directions on the heel to know that Bill Moyers is a real, live, honest-to-goodness, real man of God. Now, do you? But no. So he's got to be far-left PBS guy.
Oh, basically, Reverend Wright says we have it all wrong, unquote. Despite all that hard evidence, Wright is running around saying he's being treated unfairly and people like Moyers are buying it. Pathetic. Talking Points is advising Reverend Wright to take a long vacation, perhaps in Iran. He'd like it there, and he should take Farrakhan and Moyers with him.
Don't quite know what Wright's trying to do.
Did Moyers ever interview you? Did you ever sit with him?
Now, this is Newt Gingrich with Bill O'Reilly. I couldn't make this stuff up if I tried.
No, he never did.
Can you figure this guy out, Moyers?
Sure. Bill Moyers is a hard left sympathizer for anybody who dislikes America.
Shove it, Newt. Hard left sympathizer for anybody who dislikes America. This man was an advisor. This man was on the staff of Lyndon Baines Johnson when LBJ was actively trying to do something about poverty in this country. But he's a far-left sympathizer to anybody who dislikes America. Therefore, by implication... What are the little brain dead foxers being taught here? Bill Moyers hates America. Sure does. Hates America. Wakes up every morning, burns a flag. Sure does. You betcha. Because he's a far lefty. Wants to declare the dictatorship of the proletariat and redistribute the wealth and make everybody wear little gray pajamas and Chairman Mao hats and push a broom, because he's a far-left PBS guy.
Reverend Wright's sort of his perfect interview. He doesn't lay, from what I've seen so far and the things I've read from the interview tonight, doesn't lay a glove on him.
No.
Doesn't ask
Never
a hard
challenges.
Question.
Right.
It's pathetic.
Okay.
Your word was exactly right. It's the word I was thinking, actually, as you were talking.
You know.
Well, that just goes to show that limited minds can come up with the same limited set of words to the demon. Oh, Jesus.
We're going to wait and see the whole interview before we really hang Moyers, but Bernie's warming up.
Well, so he wants to lynch Michelle Obama, and now he's going to hang Bill Moyers. Just to review, Limbaugh is calling for riots in Denver. He is openly inciting riots. And O'Reilly has found someone else he wants to lynch. You got to give it to O'Reilly, though. This time he's wanting to lynch. He's at least moved up a little bit in the world, and he's wanting to lynch white folks, too. God almighty.
And, you know, but enough's enough with this.
Ain't that the truth? Enough is enough. But you know what? Bill O'Reilly will take the long walk to the mailbox once or twice or three or four times a month, and he'll cash a check, whatever he gets from Rupert Murdoch. Say, you know, I don't know, something like maybe $75,000 a month. No, that's not enough, is it? He would have to get $25,000 a week. Ah, oh, Jesus. Enough is enough. And now he says that coming up tonight, we're going to wait and see the interview before we really hang Moyers. But Bernie's warming up. He means Bernie Goldberg, the guy who made himself a tidy little sum of cash by asserting that there's liberal bias in the media. I can't say that without chuckling. Honest to God, I can't. Before we really hang Moyers. Deep in the hearts of these little right-wing blowhards, there is a broad, cancerous wad of genuine homicidal rage and hate. If you fired up O'Reilly on the sodium pentothal or the Versed or whatever, and you said, O'Reilly, you really want to kill Bill Moyers, don't you? I sure do. He's a hard left PBS guy. Needs hanging. And you'd like to kill Reverend Wright, too, wouldn't you, Bill? He's got to die. And Michelle Obama, you wanted to lynch her, didn't you? Of course I did. Wouldn't it be fun? Wouldn't it be fun just to jack O'Reilly up on some truth serum and get it out of him once and for all and find out who all he wants to kill? You'd like to shoot Obama yourself, wouldn't you, O'Reilly? Could I really? Because they are. The only thing that stands between them and danger from them is the fact that they are all, of course, cowards. Limbaugh's a coward. Beck is a coward. Bortz is a coward. O'Reilly is a coward. The savage Wiener is a coward. So they sit behind their microphone every night, hoping, 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 hoping that somebody out there, some Travis Bickle type, some Mark David Chapman, some Hinckley, will hear the broadcast and have it start running around in a sort of viral worminess inside their sick, twisted brains and go out and act on their exhortations to assassination. Oh, they can't say it overtly. Not too overtly. I mean, for God's sakes, O'Reilly got away with saying that they'd like to lynch Michelle Obama. And here he's saying that he's going to hang Bill Moyers. No visit from the FBI. No visit from the Secret Service where Michelle Obama was concerned. Nothing. Nothing. Not a damned thing. And when or if someone takes one of those insane steps, even if you hold the transcript up in front of their faces, no one, no one, no one will ever question or, God knows, charge one of these right-wing, hate-mongering, murder-inciting, riot-generating bastards for anything that they do, and they'll keep on taking the long walk to the mailbox. $29 million a year Flush Flimball gets for saying things like Barack the Magic Negro, for inciting riot in Denver. And his sponsors keep lining up and lining up and lining up and lining up to get their message to his listeners. Because in between incitement to riot and hoping you're urging, hoping you're influencing someone to go out and commit a political murder, why, those loony Limbaugh listeners, those ditto heads, they buy stuff. So if you can get your Snapple ads on Limbaugh, you can sell more Snapple while Travis Bickle is checking out the lands of his sniper rifle. Maybe your future Hinckley will sleep on a Swedish mattress the night before he goes out and blows away a liberal. Maybe your future Mark David Chapman will clean up all the cigarette ashes and accumulated filth in his little apartment with an Oric vacuum cleaner. Maybe your future John Wilkes Booth, before he goes out and wastes a liberal, will spend a few months taking an herbal baldness cure so that he can look really good in all the photographs after he's been a patriotic American and killed himself a liberal. How is it, this is just an inquiry, because you remember some time back when Spocko took down Melanie Morgan in San Francisco. How is it that he was able to be successful and we can't seem to do anything about Limbaugh calling for riots and O'Reilly calling for lynchings and saying he wants to hang Bill Moyers? Is it just that nobody's done this yet? Or is it because the audience is every day, virtually every day, I get an action alert from the American Family Association. Most recently, we discussed the alert that I had last week regarding revolting open-mouthed homosexual kissing on As the World Turns. And they get their little flock of a few thousand weirdos to call the switchboard at Procter & Gamble. But we can't, we can't seem to make the Limbaugh advertisers understand that we will actively work against their sponsors, their companies. This should be a no-brainer. This should be easy. This is nothing more than an email or a phone call or somebody building a website, giving the phone numbers and the email links to everybody who advertises on the programs of people like Limbaugh and O'Reilly, Savage and Bortz. And I mean, I do this stuff. If I'm out in the car and the Beckley radio station happens to run Neil Bortz, and I hear one of the network avails an ad that I know is running all over the network for Neil Bortz, it's not like, come down to Fred's Texaco, free car wash with Philip on Fridays. That's a local. That's something the local audience has to handle. But the network availabilities, the stuff that is carried on every station that carries the program, those guys, you can get in touch with. And I've been known to do it. In fact, I do it rather frequently. I wish, frankly, that I understood a little bit more about website design. Because I would buy a domain and I would put up a website with the contact info and build a network of among the listeners and so forth who would, as a public service, listen and note who is advertising for these homicidal maniacs. So that then millions and millions of people can call them and say, listen, do you realize that you're advertising with a homicidal maniac? And get the ads pulled. And keep pressure up on them. And listen to them squeal, my friends, the liberals don't want my message out there. No. Rush, buddy. Pal. We'll debate you all day long, every day. It's the business of inciting riots and engaging in overt racism, and O'Reilly, it's calling for lynchings that's the problem. But we can't do it. Spocko did it, but I guess that was either an anomaly or he has some genius that we don't have. Because you know that after what he did, you know that Melanie Morgan's contract was not renewed by the San Francisco radio station where she was peddling her filth. She's gone somewhere else. But God, there's so many things for us to do, aren't there? So many, many things for us to do. We've got to end the Iraq occupation. We've got to deal with children's health care, adults' health care, the right to vote. That's how deep the war has become in this country, the culture war. Now we actually have to defend our own right to vote. Because states like Georgia and Indiana are working overtime to take that right away. And I guess because there is so much to be done, we just don't have the time to worry about stuff like homicidal maniacs. The sad thing is, at some point in time, we're going to find ourselves regretting not having done it. Because I guarantee you it is a statistical certainty that every day, among that so-called 5 million people who tune into the likes of Flush Flimball, it is statistically certain that there's a John Wilkes Booth in there, and there's a Travis Bickle from Taxi Driver, remember? That real life, that there's a Mark David Chapman or a John David Hinckley just sitting there with the wheels turning inside their sick, 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 twisted minds, trying to figure out a way to get the job done. Because, see, we're liberals, we're progressives, we're Democrats, we are decent people. And we don't run around thinking about how cool it would be to waste a politician or a leader of a movement or a high-profile spokesperson for a cause. We don't do that kind of stuff. But the right wing, as sure as God made little green apples, does. Oh, yes, they do. They so very, very do. And one of these days, we will, we'll reap the reality of it. And somebody will be out there saying, that's the price you pay for having free speech in America. And we'll wonder what we could have done to have prevented it. So that's where we begin tonight. A little interlude coming. Jump in on the program if you want. If you've got something on your mind, let me know. 877-443-2366 or 304-658-3333. This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Once that you've decided on a killing, first you make a stone of your heart. And if you find that your hands are still willing, then you can turn a murder into art. There really isn't any need for bloodshed. Just do it with a little more finesse. If you can slip a tablet into someone's carpet, then it avoids an awful lot. Numbers 1, 2, 3. It's as easy to learn as
right, about 21 minutes before the hour. And you know what? When everything closed up and ended Friday, I treated myself to a movie. I actually had a kind of a movie-watching weekend. I watched Friday evening the film There Will Be Blood. Wow. Just wow. I had no idea until I watched the end credits roll that it was based on Upton Sinclair's book, Oil. I would have had a better idea of what I was in for had I known that in advance, but it sort of made it an added treat. If you haven't, you should. This is worth the watch. And Daniel Day-Lewis's performance is stunning. Just stunning. When you consider all the different roles that he has taken on, he's, in many ways, perhaps a sort of a modern Lon Chaney, you know, man of a thousand faces. And for those of you who are similarly turned as I, there are a couple of scenes with the evangelist, you know, the charlatan in the film, that just make you want to stand up and cheer. They're beautiful. So I highly recommend that. Had a look at the a couple of other films this weekend, but that one was the standout. That was by far the standout. And not exactly a laugh a minute or anything, but just extremely good storytelling and superior movie making. There Will Be Blood, and you will enjoy it. There should be popcorn. So, you know, give it a look. Moving on. That's enough of O'Reilly and Flimball and all of that hateful stupidity. A giggle. We got a bit of a giggle here. I remember a long time ago, back in the bad old days of terrestrial radio, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, I remember doing some story about, because I think it was back when Senator Byrd was proposing a flag-burning amendment or something like that, before Hillary Clinton did it. And I was talking about what a shameless piece of, you know, freebooted political theater it was. That I just got online and I checked to see how many different varieties of American flags you could order from China. And Lord, the list went on and on and on. But for pure irony, well, you can't beat this story. Comes out of Guangdong, China, where police have discovered, mind you. Oh, we just found it. It just, boom, it appeared, materialized. Have discovered a factory that manufactures free Tibet flags. Really, in the People's Republic of China. It was taking overseas orders. I imagine if you went and Googled it, you could probably find the factory itself. They were making them hand over fist. Couldn't get them out fast enough. Workers said that they were just making colorful flags and didn't realize their meaning. Because naturally, being a fascist state, the Chinese government will come down on the working people and not as hard on the bosses. So they thought they were just making these pretty colorful flags with the rays of the sun rising up over a mountain peak. But then they started watching television and saw images of protesters holding the flag. And like good little residents of a fascist state, they, quote unquote, alerted the authorities. This is all reported by Hong Kong's Ming Pao newspaper. So there went the Chinese secret police and the factory owner, and it doesn't say here whether thumb screws or water torture or anything else was used, that the factory owner told police that the emblems were ordered from outside China and he didn't know they stood for an independent Tibet. Suspicious workers checked out the meaning of the flag by going online. Now there's a whole lot of stuff you cannot find on the internet in fascist China. You can, however, find out what the meaning of the flag with the rays of the rising sun coming up over a mountain peak mean. Thousands of flags had already been packed for shipping. And the secret police believe that some may already have been sent overseas. And may even show up, this is kind of precious, may even show up in Hong Kong during the Olympic torch relay there this week. The response of the fascist government of China? Well, they've stepped up the inspection of automobiles heading to the Shenzhen Special Economic Zone and onwards toward Hong Kong. The Olympic torch is due to show up in Hong Kong on Friday and then travel to a series of cities in mainland fascist China before reaching Beijing for the start of the Olympic Games this August. This is irony that is just too good to pass up. Getting the money-grubbing, slave labor supporting fascist Chinese government to manufacture the symbols of the protests of the people that the fascist government of China is oppressing to this day. That's beautiful. And of course, it's the nature of fascism. Is there a buck in it? We'll make it. Anything for a buck. Or a yuan, or whatever. Then you can't just. Oh, wouldn't you like to have one of those? Nah, not really. But when you think about, workers became suspicious. Yeah, I'd get suspicious too. If I knew that my head was going to roll. I mean, it's bad enough being chained to a table for a 16-hour shift every day. But then to get imprisoned or sent to one of the Falun Gong organ-harvesting hospitals or whatever for being quiet, for just shutting up and doing your job, shut up and work. Mm-mm. That's how it works in a full-blown fascism, though. Children rat on parents, parents rat on children, neighbors rat on neighbors, cousins rat on cousins, in-laws rat on in-laws. It's all just a big paranoid rat fest. That is, of course, already beginning to take hold here. How can you not root for Tibet in this? A nonviolent people. And you know what? The Olympics are a perfect venue for this. Because the Olympics themselves, come on. First of all, I can't imagine watching the Olympics. Not just because they're in China. I don't watch any Olympics. Because they're dummied up now. The original idea was to have amateur athletics. Well, that's out the window. And now it's just a big money laundering operation for the International Olympic Committee. We know that. So, the idea that, you shouldn't protest the Olympics. It's a pure celebration of sport. Eat me. It is not. It's a pure celebration of money grubbing athletic promotions. What a pity the Tibetans in exile couldn't enter a few athletes in it. You want to know how free the Olympics are? Do you think for an instant that the Tibetan government in exile would be allowed to sponsor, say, a marathoner or a soccer team or hoops or sprinting, swimming? Now, I'm sure the Chinese government would like to let the Dalai Lama compete in the 200-foot diving straight-down competition, but they'd probably make him wear those really neat lead swim fins. Free. Untrammeled goodwill athlete. No. No, no. Because if that was true, there would be a Tibetan team. And they would be right there competing in China and putting it in the fascist Chinese government's face. Sort of like what we did when we rubbed Adolf Hitler's nose in it in 1936. But even then, there were limitations. We could send Jesse Owens, and Jesse Owens could burst the bubble of Aryan superiority. But we could not send a Jewish competitor. Really. Sid Luckman? Yeah. Sid Luckman. Went on to be a prodigious Hall of Fame quarterback, I think for the maybe the Detroit Lions or something? Bears? Not sure. My old NFL history isn't so good. He qualified to compete in the 1936 Berlin Olympics, but he was prevented from going because it was one thing to let Jesse Owens run rings around his Hitler's Aryan superiority, but you couldn't have a Jewish man going over and just really putting the finishing touches on it. Because in 1936, there were still a lot of Americans who thought Hitler and Mussolini had it right, and Franco in Spain. Oh, yeah. So, don't look for the Tibetan swimming team in Beijing this August. They ain't going to be there. They've already been drowned. Or shot. Or beaten. Or raped. Because that's what fascist governments do, right? And by the way, while we're at it, just for clarity's sake, the Chinese government is no more communist than Hitler's Germany was socialist. Now, Hitler called it National Socialism, but it wasn't socialist. It was fascist. Same thing goes for China. They call themselves the People's Republic of China and are, according to the tenets of Mao Zedong and Zhou Enlai and folks like that, communist, but they're not. No, this is nothing more than a fascist tyranny. And they are married up, absolutely married up to the idea of anything for a buck. And they have a huge oligarchic superstructure. That's a lot easier to make China fit a model of fascism than communism anytime you care to try. Interesting news, though. What did I see in the last few days? That China may be down to little more than a, what, 12 days of coal in their reserves? Our blogger Betsy sent this along. Very interesting. From Tree Hugger. China only has enough coal for 12 days of consumption, 3 days less than a month ago, according to the state-run media last Wednesday. In certain parts of China, such as densely populated Hebei province in the north, reserves are down to less than a week, according to the Xinhua News Agency. Coal reserves have slumped by 12% to 46.7 million tons, according to the commission. That's not a good sign, because, you know, China loses 10, 20, 30,000 coal miners a year. And they can't buy it from Australia fast enough. Australia is destroying its own, the western end of that mini-continent, with great humongous coal pits. And of course you know that here in West Virginia, we ship our mountaintop removal coal to China. So all this business about, oh, coal is the key to America's energy future, that only if you consider that America's energy future is centered somewhere in Guangdong province, where they manufacture big screen TVs and little children chained to tables to glue tennis shoes together. Then I guess you can make that claim. But we're sending it to China. We are. Tree Hugger poses the question, will this make Chinese authorities take renewable energy more seriously? Will the U.S. resume a world leadership role on climate issues? Were the limits to growth people right all along? Let's see. No, no, and yes. But we're going to have that sort of crammed down our throats. We're going to have to learn that there are limits the hard way. By the way, next summer, the entire Arctic area may be ice-free. Imagine that. For the first time in recorded human history, a ship may be able to navigate all the way across the North Pole and never see so much as a speck of ice. That's something to think about, isn't it? So we're at the end of the first hour. If you want to involve yourself in the program, I encourage you to do so on any topic that you care to bring to the table, because that's how we operate here. What you want to talk about, we will. That's the nature of conversation radio. We'll be right back. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Tell me in my home you're forgiven. body of one soul I adore wants to die. You have always told me you not live past 25. I say stay long enough to repay.
Listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. The United Auto Workers are planning a major demonstration as Foxwoods Casino in Connecticut prepares to cut the ribbon on a $700 million MGM Grand expansion. The new wing will be opened at midnight on May 17th, and the union plans to make its presence known as they continue to seek representation for 2,600 dealers at the casino. The dealers have voted in favor of union representation, but the casino continues to contest the results. Melinda Tuhus has more on the background for this story.
After a majority of the 2,600 table game dealers at the casino voted in favor of the United Auto Workers last November, the tribal government appealed the vote to the regional office of the National Labor Relations Board in Hartford, Connecticut. In mid-March, an administrative law judge ruled that the union had not engaged in any objectionable conduct warranting setting aside the election, as charged by the tribal leadership, and he recommended that the election be certified on behalf of the union. Tribal officials plan to appeal the decision to the National Labor Relations Board in Washington, D.C. Union Organizing Committee member and games dealer Denise Gladue is looking forward to her first union contract at Foxwoods.
I know that the NLRB and us organizers and the UAW didn't do anything wrong before the vote, and I'm just very happy that the judge sided in our favor and that we're going to be certified soon.
For WIN, I'm Melinda Tuhus in New Haven, Connecticut.
The May Day anti-war shutdown of West Coast ports is shaping up to be a real bottom-up rank-and-file action. Doug Cunningham has more.
West Coast longshore workers have voted to stop work for 8 hours during the day shift on May 1st, shutting down West Coast ports to protest of wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Clarence Thomas is with the Port Workers May Day Organizing Committee in San Francisco.
We believe that only in a peaceful world is it possible for there to be the kinds of gains that all working people need in order to have any kind of economic sustainability.
ILWU Local 10's Jack Heyman.
This is the first time in U.S. labor history that workers have actually stopped work in order to stop a war.
Actor and activist Danny Glover, anti-war activist Cindy Sheehan, and former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney will be among the featured speakers at the No Peace, No Work mobilization in San Francisco on May Day. The port workers are getting support from labor councils, local labor unions, rank-and-file committees, and anti-war and social justice organizations across the country.
We realize that millions of workers would like to be able to take the action that the ILWU is doing, and we're taking that action in their name. All
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Okie dokie. You know what? I got a ton of respect for those International Longshore Workers Union members who are striking on May Day. Good on them. What guts. What courage. Because it does take a lot to do something like that. There's your patriots. There's your heroes. Sure thing. Phone lines are wide open if you want to jump in and involve yourself in the program. I highly encourage you to do so. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366. Or, if you want to save us a buck or two, 304-658-3333. Either way works just fine, and they ring the same place. So, you know, wear it out. We'll go to the phones right now. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, David, how are you?
How are you? Yeah, I've been kind of busy, so this is my first time calling it. I'm getting some kind of feedback or something.
Not coming from here. There's nothing but you and me and the telephone.
Right. Well, I was just going to say, interesting, I thought, wow. You know, I think I might have to call back because I'm still getting on.
Okay, try it. Could be something funky with the connection.
Okay.
Call right back.
All right.
We dance on the cutting razor's edge of technology, and sometimes we slice our little heels. Yes, we do. Hopefully we'll hear back from David in a minute. So, yeah. Yeah, here we go. Just one second here. Maybe it'll work this time. I don't know. Maybe there's a moose standing on the phone line somewhere up in Maine. You never know. Let's try this again.
All right. Yeah, this sounds better.
Okay. Yeah, I think there was a moose standing on one of your phone lines.
That's what it sounded like. It sounded like a possessed moose, and he sounded like he was talking back. That's the wonders of a DIY network.
Yes, it is.
Well, I just wanted to say something to people that should brighten up people's days. The new Al Green album is devastatingly amazing. It's an instant classic, and you will be hearing from it all around the world. Amazing, amazing, amazing. And I don't know if you got a chance yet to listen to it, Bob. But
I haven't yet. No. I've been in severe movie mode this weekend.
Well, it's the first thing, and if John's listening too, it's the first thing you guys got to put on the top of your list. There's a little 8-minute promo video that someone put together of the making of the album, and it's like I said, it's amazing. It's going to win.
So you're saying Grammy all the way.
I'm not just saying Grammy. I'm saying this. Okay, if for those who know their Al Green history. Let me put it this way. Al Green, during the 80s and 90s, he went all Christian, ha-ha, crazy on us.
Yeah, see, I remember when the Reverend Al Green was... He had gone all wacky by like 78 or 79. We had his Christian records in the bin at the gospel radio station where I started.
Well, you know, he still is kind of he'll never get that out of his system, and also that's also a part of it's kind of sad to see, but it's also a part of the great African American music in the past, including the soul music tradition.
Yeah, it gets
really
its,
steeped in it.
Yeah, it gets its birth in the church, I don't care where you are on planet Earth, David, ultimately, if you start chasing musical origins backwards, there is always going to be some reference point at which any music anywhere in the world has its roots in something mystical or something spiritual. You just can't get away from it.
That's right. I agree, and I just think a lot of it it stems to I don't know, like this. I like the music, I just don't like the politics of it.
What's wrong with the politics of it?
No, I mean when it comes to highly religious music.
Oh, okay. So I mean,
when it comes to overly preaching, and I think that's why it's good to see Al Green making an album like this again.
So you're saying it is secular in nature?
Yeah. I guess if you know, I don't know how well you know your Al Green album history, but the last great Al Green album considered by all Al Green audiophiles is the Bell album. And that was like in 1977. So this one picks up, it's called Lay It Down, for those who need to write it down. It's on Blue Note Records. It picks up right where that left off. It's produced by Amir Thompson and James Poyser and Al Green of The Roots. And Al Green. And it's 2.5 years worth of work. They said the first night they got in the studio, they wrote 8 songs on the spot.
Oh, wow.
It has this spontaneous nature to it, and the producers really studied everything about what makes an Al Green record someone wants to listen to an Al album. And like I said, it's a... it's amazing, and you can't pass it up, and that's all there is to it.
I don't hear you wax rhapsodic, you know, at this level about just everything, David.
No. This is, you know, I like music and I like albums, and there is such a thing as what I call the universal artist, and Al Green is one of the universal artists. I can ask my dad, do you like Al Green? I can ask my mom, do you like Al Green? I can ask an alien from Venus, do you like Al Green? And I can ask Newt Gingrich, do you like Al Green?
And they'll all say yeah.
Yeah, they'll all say yes, that's right. And that's one of those rare things.
Oh, stuff like Let's Stay Together, yeah, gracious. Yeah,
yeah, Let's Stay Together, Love and Happiness, Take Me to the River. I mean, the list goes on and on. But yeah, it's really amazing. They really kept it. I guess the inspiration for the album is, if you haven't heard, Amir Thompson said he kept listening to Van Leer Rose, Loretta Lynn's new album, and he kept listening to it over and over again.
Yeah, that's the one. That's the one that Jack White produced a couple of years ago.
Right. And what he wanted to do was he wanted to create it sonically, so all the Al Green fans of the past, what they thought they would never hear again, they are hearing right in front of their ears. And every single layer, when I'm talking about, so for example, when you go in the studio and you're a trained musician, in an Al Green session, you have to get untrained because everything happens spontaneous. Like the guitars, the horns, the organ, the vocals, and the lyrics. Al Green likes to write on the spot, and he encourages other people to do things that they wouldn't normally do. And that's what makes an Al Green recording so different and so unorthodox, which is what a lot of people didn't realize, is the fact that everything that he does is kind of just basically improvising and ad-libbed, and that's probably where he finds the heart and soul of everything and how so many other people struggle. And also his natural talent, but
so is it is it released now?
No. It comes out May 19th, and the story behind it is Amir Thompson of The Roots. In case people didn't know, that's a legendary hip hop group. They were like the first live hip hop group of the new renaissance of hip hop. And in case people aren't familiar with his history, he also produced Jill Scott, who has won Grammy after Grammy, and then he produced Erykah Badu, and then of course D'Angelo. So he has a history of producing great artist, and then Josh Stone. But Al Green is kind of like, well, I'll put it to you this way for people who don't understand. It's a Star Wars analogy. You mess with the Jawas, the same people, the Jedi's in training, right? The Jedi's in training.
You're working for it tonight, David. You're really working.
And then you get to the Yoda. Al Green is a Yoda.
Okay.
That's the way I see it. And I guess what was supposed to happen was Amir was supposed to produce Bill Withers, but he couldn't get a hold of him. And for those who don't know, Bill Withers has been out of the music business since like 1984. He swore he would never make another record, and he's pretty much kept to that promise. Said it was too crazy for him, so he left. I'd probably
be out of line. I mean, asking you like where you got hold of this, because like you'd have to kill me if you told me, right?
Where I got hold of this?
Yeah.
Etherville. That's where.
Okay. Yeah. Etherville. Got it.
Etherville. It's a fabulous place. I have a feeling that it was leaked either by the record label or by someone close to the company because they were really excited about it.
Yeah,
because
to create the buzz. Yeah. Darn it! I'd like to play some of it because we're just teasing people now.
Oh yeah, I know you should.
But I'll honor the release date, and I'll, you know, yeah.
No, I mean, if you play a song off it because everyone else has played a song off it or whatever, I mean, just find out what the single is, and you can play that single or whatever. I think radio's already, you know, they already have the promo reels together and stuff like that, and I think they already have the single chose. I'm not sure which one it is, but anyways, so you got a call. The drummer got a call, Amir Thompson got a call and said, how would you like to work with Al Green? And then before you know it, they're working together, and history is made. And when I say history, I mean, people will be talking about this record in 20 years. That's how impressive it is.
That's high. That's a pretty high bar.
I know, because when you listen to this, you'll be like, I can't believe they were able to, because Amir has an ear that is unlike anyone in the industry, and he's one of the best kept secret as a producer outside hip hop. He can recreate sonically what you thought could never be found. Again, he understands how to record analog situation format, and he also understands about rhythm and timing and how to play. As Al Green said, he can play in front of the beat, in back of the beat, but he'll never lose the beat. And like I said, it's an impressive recording. I'm not going to harp on it anymore. I just wanted to put it out there for the people to know what's coming, and hopefully they'll like it. And that's it on that point.
Okay.
And the other thing I wanted to talk about, shifting gears, was the fact that I was listening to Barack Obama, and I don't know if you caught this, Bob, but Christopher Wallace asked what his feelings on Petraeus were. And he said, oh, that's an excellent choice. And I thought, oh, you didn't just say that. Nothing. I mean, you don't have to say it's an excellent choice.
No, you don't. You know.
You could say, I have my concerns. You can say that politically. No one's going to get you for that. I have my concerns. We're in dangerous times. I don't know. Something like that. But he said it was an excellent choice. So, I don't know. And I wonder if I said that to a lot of Barackians, if they knew, and I'm not saying they're unaware, but I wonder if they know what Petraeus is responsible for, what his legacy is, and the fact that Obama said, yeah, he's an excellent choice. I like him.
Oh, for pity's sakes.
I'd like to get your thoughts on it.
That stuff makes me crazy.
I know.
But by the same token, look, let's just put it bluntly. I frankly think for the the whole Reverend Wright thing has left Barack Obama a little bit snake bit. Because the light has gone on, and he realizes now that every blessed word he says is going to be scrutinized in the extreme, not just by the right-wing media, but by, you know, Senator Clinton. I mean, if he'd said, we'll have to wait till the hearings, you know. I'm sure that Senator Clinton would have been out there the next day. Why does he hate it? You know how this works. And so he's a little bit off. I think he's a little bit on his heels right now. You know, sort of rock back a little bit because it's been made so ugly and so toxic that he's literally watching every word before it comes out of his mouth.
Yeah, I had that feeling too. But then, you know,
bear in mind, David, he is also, to a certain extent, trying to be all things to all people.
Yeah.
And personally, I disagree with that. There's some people I don't want anything to do with. And there are some of those people that he's still trying to reach out to. And maybe it's because he's younger, or maybe he thinks he has a special gift. I don't know. But, you know, when you extend the olive branch and you draw back a bloody stump a couple of times, you'll learn.
Yeah. I am really starting to have a problem with the pattern, and I'm sure you see it too, Bob, where we just have wealthy, nouveau, if you want to call them, Richie Rich type candidates who have money, and I'm not knocking them for that, but they lose the ability to relate to...
But without a doubt, he is the least moneyed of the three.
Yeah, I know, but there's still that part in me that's like...
I said it the other night. I look at McCain and Clinton and Obama, and I don't see a white guy, a white woman, and a black man. I see three millionaires.
That's right. That's what I'm talking about, and... I don't know. I think this country has put so much a profile on type of or a love or a passion or an interest for financial wealth that it takes place over everything else. And
that's the way the system's been rigged.
Oh, I know, and hopefully.
Oh, by the way, I just had this roll into me from John Fox, David.
Yeah.
He wants you to email him which Parliament song you want him to play. Oh Lord, that got more confusing than it needed to be. But you'd mentioned a Parliament song, and he needs to.
Oh, the Funkadelic song. Yes.
Yeah. Just email.
I'll email him the link to that one.
Okay. Cool.
Oh, yeah, one last thing before I close. I just wanted to mention that about Obama, and mostly I called for the Al Green thing. But since we're talking movies, I do think that Daniel Day-Lewis does steal the show in There Will Be Blood. Pretty amazing performance. But we also can't forget, even though I wasn't that much of a fan of the movie, Tom Cruise in Magnolia.
Now, I didn't see that.
Bob, you got to see it because you love Paul PTA, as they call him, Paul Thomas Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
He has such a great eye for what dogma is in theology and religion, and there are some great scenes. Even though, like I said, I wasn't for the entire movie. I was for the dialogue that Tom Cruise delivered, and it's well worth seeing. And then the other film that I was going to recommend was Southland Tales. I know you haven't seen that yet, Bob.
No.
But you got to see it because it plays into everything that we're talking about right now. The war on terror, homeland security, the future, quantum physics, Republican, Democrat, liberals, communism, capitalism.
Southland Tales.
What is that?
Southland Tales, you said, is the name?
Southland Tales, yes. The Rock is in it. Sarah Michelle Gellar plays a porno star who is part of the rebel liberal underground. I don't know, and Justin Timberlake plays an Iraqi vet who has completely a disintegrated mind. And when I say Justin Timberlake is going to be one of the actors to watch, if there is any doubt, watch him in Southland Tales, and your doubt will go away. Guy is a natural born talent.
On your recommendation, I'm going to watch this. But you said The Rock, Justin Timberlake, and Sarah Michelle Gellar, and you've given me three reasons not to, okay?
Yeah, well, that's the thing about that's the thing about Richard Kelly.
I'm gonna take your word. I'll give it a run. I will.
Okay. Here's the thing about it. It did get bad reviews from a lot of people, and I know that's gonna put off a lot of people. But to me, I won't turn away a movie that has a levitating ice cream truck and a tagline that says. A tagline about real pimps never die, or something similar to that.
Okay.
John Lovitz is in it, and he plays a psychotic cop. So what's not to love?
Okay. Your cred's on the line.
My cred's on the line.
Hey, David, have a good night, brother.
All right, later.
Later.
Bye.
Pop culture correspondent David. From Maine. Glad when the moose got off the phone line. Though that must have, I know it's weird when you're talking and you got something bizarre blowing back at you. Sometimes you'll have that though. Darn it, you hung up. Whoever you were. Sometimes you got to stick around a little bit. That's just how it works. Generally, I give David a lot of credit when it comes to his taste in music. I can generally give him high praise for his taste there. Sorry, answering a chat query there. That's just how complex and complicated it gets around here. Chat. Talk. We've got it all. And by the way, just to let you know, I got the coolest message over the weekend. We had someone sent in a contribution to help keep us on the air. And the message just said, for playing the song and highlighting race issues, once it's understood, it's overcome. And this was after the discussion we had on Friday about the Sean Bell verdict. But you know what? I see that kind of thing, and it makes everything worthwhile. To know that people understand what it is we're trying to do here, and to know that folks think it is worth keeping going. It just blows me away. Just blows me away. And we're still $400, closer to $500 away from making our April goal. It's going to be close. We got two more days to pull it off. I sure hope that we can, because just squeaking in under the wire from month to month and keeping things going gets to be just the tiniest bit, nerve-wracking. Let's go to the phones. Hi, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, what's up?
What's going on?
I don't know. What do you got, Gary?
Not much. Just calling in. I heard you talking about money and donate, so I'm going to try something probably by the end of this week with you.
No sweat.
Won't be much because my money's kind of like spread out over a lot of different, I have a tendency to cast my rocks on many waters, like they like to say.
I know. Believe me, I comprehend that.
So I have a $10 thing that I just give $10. I might spend $200 a month, and I'll just give it to, 20 different places. That's what I usually, at least somewhere around there, that's what I
Well, but you know, we're so grateful to have what we get. We will, you know, as long as folks are trying, we'll keep trying too. That's all we can say.
Yeah, because I'm trying to get some money, you know, to DNC something, because I saw them run an ad on, you know, run the ad on McCain, and they hit me with a, it's like once you give a donation to them, you know, it's like they follow you forever. So it's like, I'll try to send something to them as well, because you got to start getting ads on the air about McCain. And, you know, I think we need to start.
And I was proud to see that the DNC has started doing that. I hate that we have to take our money to give it to them, for them to turn around and give it to people who hate us in the first place to run the ads. But, you know, that's the way the beast is operating. That's the way the beast is fed right now.
Got to get a message out. Got to get it there.
And this is a good one. You know, this time I saw the ad.
I like that.
They're putting it right across his bow and hitting him right in the face with the stay in Iraq 100 years business.
Good timing, too, because, you know, Democrats not getting attacked with these side issues. So it's good to have something in there to, keep people reminded. You know, three people running for president, not four. So let's, stay focused on McCain and what it came out of his mouth. Because what comes out of his mouth is going to matter to people down the road.
and people need to hear that he has said it. And frankly, yeah. He needs to be made to explain it, because while I despise Karl Rove, I do tend to agree with his maxim that when you're explaining, you're losing.
There you go.
And frankly, America needs to make John McCain explain to us how it's okay to keep our children in Iraq for 100 years. That's a lot of generations, Gary.
Yeah, he said it. And I think, too, when you see a clip, you kind of see, like, he's talking to the person. There's kind of a disconnect going on, and you actually see it. So this whole thing about somebody not connecting, you know, Democrats not connecting, you actually see him not connecting with the urgency of the question. Even though it was in his familiar environment, it's still, when you see it, you put yourself in the position of the guy who's asking McCain that question, and you automatically transport yourself to say, you know what, I don't like that answer that he gave that guy, and I'm that guy. And I think that's kind of like what that thing does. You know, because it's the thing that's great about the ad is that if you notice, he's not talking to the camera; he's kind of talking sideways, which visually, you know, I'm just an artist, so it's a weak. It makes you look weak. And
yeah.
He's looking at the camera, and he's talking to this person. He's got kind of like a little hunch back thing. It's not like busting on him because he's old or anything, but it's just he had this kind of like almost semi-aloof defensive posture about it. It's just something strange about that whole visual.
Yeah, but by the same token, it was that, you know, I don't care if we're there for 100 years. It's sort of a smart-ass response. Do you know what I mean?
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying he wasn't connecting. That's what I'm saying.
It was flippant.
It was flippant. But it also seemed like, to me, he kind of, the way he was talking was, he actually meant it, too. It wasn't like he's just saying, I'm just saying this to piss this guy off. There's a part of it like, yeah, we're going to be there, and you don't like it, so what? It's the same kind of Dick Cheney answer. When Dick Cheney said, so, you know, to that question, when they asked him about the American people not agreeing with him on the war, and he just said, so. He's kind of like the same kind of politics, and I think that, you know, DNC should run ads like that, just run an ad with Dick Cheney saying so, and run an ad with, you know, just keep running these ads, and we don't have to worry about the Democrats winning in November. So, I think that's, you know, I'm trying to at least send $10 too. But hey, you know, do that. Because the one thing is that with all these campaigns, whether you're for Obama or Clinton, it's like they're raising a lot of money, and, you know, you give all your money to one person, and, you know, you don't know what they're going to do with it. Their candidacy may fall apart or whatever, but I just believe you kind of spread it out over, you know, try to get some to the horn, small,
mm-hmm.
large venues, spread it out. The message is going to get out there from so many different points. You know, you don't have to worry about if one point fails, the other points are going to take up the slack. So that's kind of been my philosophy. So, you know, just understand when you get just a certain amount from me.
Oh, no. Believe me. I don't question what we get from anybody. Because I know that no matter what we get from every single person that does choose to help keep the horn on the air, Gary, it is a sacrifice. And I understand that. Oh, Lord, I understand that. And like I said, it has for me, it is a humbling experience.
But everybody's money's tight, you know, too.
Yeah, and I noticed the first of the so-called stimulus checks went out today.
Yeah, somebody gets some of that stimulus money. I don't get mine probably through July because I don't like giving my bank account money to IRS or anything, even though I know they can get it in a heartbeat. Just like I don't want to make anything easier for them if everything in the world just goes to crap, you know. I'm just kind of paranoid like that. I'm kind of like, you know,
Well, I'm still in I'll believe it when I see it mode. We filed our return, just like we always do, but I do not believe we'll see a blessed dime.
Yeah, and they're going to tax you on it. So it's like, oh, thanks. You know, why don't you just give it to me, just flat 300? Don't tell me, I don't want anything about a tax later or anything.
See, and that's the thing. Bear Stearns gets $32 billion, and it's not a rebate against next year's taxes.
There you go.
On the other hand, an American family gets a grand. It doesn't come with strings attached. It comes with full-blown ropes. And the rope runs all the way back to Washington.
Yeah, you're basically borrowing money against the future. You got to pay that money back to them.
Yeah, our corporate bettors get freebies. There is no such thing as a free lunch for us, however.
It just came out today. I don't know if you heard this, but I mean, I don't know if it came out today, but I know it's been reported on CNN, which means probably 2 or 3 weeks ago. But, you know, a lot of the banks now are kind of interesting. They're raising their interest rates. Like, I guess it was like last week or whatever. I said, oh, this is very interesting, right? When people are getting their checks, they get ready to raise the rates to get a, you know, ease a piece of the pie. Just, what a bunch of thieves, man. It's just, it's really crazy.
Well, when you look at the price of a tank of gas now, how is this supposed to stimulate the economy? First of all, to stimulate the economy, it needs to be free.
Yeah.
Secondly, we need. I don't know. I think about these things all the time in terms of what I wish I could do. It'd be nice to have a list of American places you can spend your money. You know, you want a new pair of boots? Keep the money at least inside the continental United States. You know, you can't do that by going to Walmart or Target or anywhere else. But you can look around and you can find American-made stuff. And if we just tried to make sure that everything that. If America tried to make sure that this so-called stimulus money was spent on American workers and American goods, you might actually see some impact out of it. But there's not going to be any impact out of sending it to Bentonville, Arkansas, for them to send to Guangdong Province. Because that's not stimulating America. That's stimulating Guangdong Province.
You're right. I mean, there's no talk of, they just kind of like tell people, you know, people are just going to do what they want to do tomorrow. What are you going to do tomorrow? I'm going to buy a good video game or whatever. You don't see Lou Dobbs or all these other people, you know, who supposedly so pro-American say, well, you know, why don't you spend the money on an American company? Or you don't see too many shows that you see on TV. I don't really watch a lot of TV, but you don't see too many shows like you said there. This is the most responsible way, you know, to take this money that we're going to give you and make it circulate back into the economy. It's a temporary fix for political reasons.
Yeah, it doesn't stimulate the economy if you fill your tank. It doesn't stimulate the economy if you use it to pay your power bill that's going through the roof. It doesn't stimulate the economy to do any of that kind of stuff because you were going to do that already.
The only thing that stimulates any economy of any place is two things, energy and jobs. If they took that money and was investing in new, you know, a better way for us to use energy, that would help the economy. And the second way is to create jobs. Now they'll also say, well, you know, retail sector will pick up a little bit, people will buy stuff, but again, that's going back to service industry. It's not creating jobs that, you know, like you said, could sustain itself. And that's really kind of the problem. I mean, that's why the Clinton years were so good, because you had the internet, you had a whole new, you had information age coming, just like the industrial age, and it just boomed the economy. And since then, really haven't had anything, you know, come in behind it. I really think the next revolution will be kind of like a more micro manufacturing, because the technology's out there to do that kind of stuff, but people don't really talk about it.
And that's one of the things you can do with the internet, Gary. You can look for places where you really can purchase American goods, and you can find a lot of that on the internet with these small, what I call mom and pop operations. Whether it's clothing or shoes, or, you know, if you want to find it and you want to know that it was made in America by American workers, you can find it a lot easier on the internet than you can wandering through Wally World.
Well, you know, the thing is that, you know, as me and you talk tonight on this thing, I mean, it's growing. It's going to be a painful growth, but it's happening now. I mean, you have, you know, your voice out here. You have, you know, like you said, other groups are forming, you know, networks all over the internet. And the kids now are doing that. The mainstream media pretty much is dying. And I was reading some articles in the New York Times. We already have massive layoffs. And who really cares about their opinions anymore anyway, because it's a whole joke. So, you know, the world really is changing, but it's going to be a painful change that I don't really think needs to be this damn painful. You know?
But the pain is going to come from the people who are resisting the change. They're going to make it worse for the rest of us.
Exactly. A lot of people are going to die. I mean, a lot of people really are going to die from sickness and health and just desperation and depression and all those other things that kill life, because there's a lot of walking dead people nowadays in this country. Unfortunately, people don't know that. But there are a lot of people out here just so, like, depressed and shot out. They're not really even, you know, they're kind of like half-life, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're not really living their potential, you know. It's just really kind of sad. America really blowing its greatness, you know.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I've got something in the stack this evening, Gary. It's a, I guess you'd call it an op-ed piece on CNN from that genius of economic thought, Glenn Beck. Now, you know, we know he's toxic and he's just wildly insane. But he's
Rush Limbaugh, if I don't actually listen to him. He's that annoying.
Yeah. Well, Beck,
I can listen to it. I can't listen to that.
Beck says the U.S. is a suicidal superpower. That much is kind of true. But what he explains as why we're suicidal is because we're not giving the American oil industry the freedom to pollute us at will and to burn more fossil fuels and to make our future less secure. That's what constitutes suicidal ideation on a national basis for a loony like Glenn Beck. It's astonishing.
He seems to have some revelation. We had a little health problem about the health industry.
Yeah, but the next you turn around, Gary, he has his little road to Damascus moment, and the next thing you know, even though he was in a private hospital with private for-pay, for-profit insurance, he's blaming the government. You know, that it's just crazy.
Well, you know, those people are like half-life people, too, because, you know, it's like the pundits on the TV shows. You watch them, and they talk, and I can tell you, and I know, you know, I've kind of watched this stuff, you know, kind of being a media person. You know, people don't really kind of know this. But the fact of the matter is right now, and I can tell you this for sure, you know, Mike Malloy talks about this. Clearly, the CIA, you heard about this thing that came out that they were doing propaganda with the military to run.
Sure.
CIA is all up in the media now, CNN and all these other places. And the thing is, if you notice, that the media people are boxed in. They can't talk outside. They can't talk about torture. They can talk about it to some degree, but it's really kind of frightening. People aren't really watching what's going on. The mass media is boxed in. They have to almost talk about these distractions.
Well, okay, look at Glenn Beck as a case in point. This guy has ratings that you have to use algebra to comprehend because they're negative numbers. There are non-persons watching Glenn Beck. His ratings are so bad. Now, how does this guy, in a ratings-driven industry, how does this guy stay on the air unless somebody's subsidizing it and writing the check?
Well, it's like the film industry. People wonder why Woody Allen, certain people, Spike Lee, whatever, can make films even though they aren't popular. But in the film industry, for their legacy or for whatever they have, they got to have a certain type of art films, or certain types of point of views that has to be, you know, has to be solidified to carry on this legacy. And to me, you know, like you said, Glenn Beck, Rush Limbaugh, all these people, this whole notion of what I call, I don't want to call white supremacy, because it's not that. I mean, they fool a lot of poor whites with this, you know, with this whole working class white voter crap. We all out here, you know, struggling, whether you're white, black, or whatever, under a certain social economic thing, and it's the biggest scam in the world. And this is how the rich stay rich, by sucking off the poor. We all know the scam. But if for some reason, when you go out into the streets of America and some of the more
say it. They just, the people really don't get it. But they're starting to get a little bit now, Bob, because they really are hurting. But it goes back to something that has been said. I mean, they just cannot seem to be able to get to the point where revolution is necessary. And I think the day was, I know you heard about this, but you know, you had the truckers came in and started blocking up some streets in D.C.
Right.
Yeah. See, this is what this is about. They know, people know that this thing can start to tip the other way. and if they're trying to keep this thing boxed in a certain way, I believe, because they know that American people right now are kind of teetering on, like we were talking last time, I was saying, like, we were talking about, I think it's going to take this revolution. Some guy going to go to the grocery store and buy a bag of potato chips, and it's barely any potato chips, and it's just going to start a revolution. I really think that we're getting close to that point. You know, when you got truckers showing up at Washington, all you need is one incident. You know, one of the truckers have an incident. You know how it goes, Bob.
Sure.
With somebody out in one of my homeland security cops, and all of a sudden, truckers all over the world say, we're going to shut the whole damn thing down. So this thing now is going to get serious. And I heard now the Ron Paul people shut down the Nevada convention over the weekend or whatever. So, you heard about that, right?
Yeah, I did. And I was kind of sitting there just loving it.
Now they're saying that they're going to, I guess, going to disrupt the Republican.
I saw a blog post the other day saying file Federal Election Commission complaints against McCain because he's an illegal candidate at this point, which he is.
Yeah.
That would catapult Ron Paul to the top of the Republican ticket. Now, some of this stuff, I'm pretty sure there's got to be some glue sniffing involved. But
he did take that money, supposedly, and use it for a collateral loan, which you can't do because you can't.
Well, you can't do that. And this latest business.
Well, they're not going to bother you on that. I mean, come on.
Well, the latest business on his wife's private Learjet or whatever, Gulfstream 5, what have you. It turns out it's sleazy because there are new rules that he participated in drafting that says that political candidates have to pay charter rates instead of the cheaper first-class airline rates. But then he crafted his own sort of personal exemption, because there's a loophole that was put in there with his connivance that says that they don't have to reimburse full cost if the plane is owned by a candidate, a candidate's family, or by a privately held company controlled by a candidate or a candidate's family member. And that is specifically to apply to Cindy McCain's personal jet.
And her fortune as well, to prenup everything else.
Yeah.
Mr. Loophole, you know? Loophole McCain.
Senator Kept Man.
You know, we need to start branding him. McCain, just come out with all other stuff. You know, they're going to brand our candidate, going to brand theirs. At least ours will be in truth.
That's why I keep calling him the McCain-Turian McCain-Turian. Because he's nuts. He is badly, badly mentally deficient. Hey, Gary, good to hear from you, brother.
Okay, all right, let's go.
All right, we'll talk soon. Right. Bye now. And rolling onward, I hope we've still got... Okay. Let's try this one more time. Hold on. Let's see. Yeah, about 10 minutes before the hour of 8 o'clock. You did see this stuff on McCain, right? The New York Times article that came out that busted him, to the extent that the New York Times busts anybody. Saying that some campaign finance experts say that using the exemption that I just shared goes against the spirit of the new law, and that McCain has, you know, straight talk about my wife's personal jet. Here's the straight talk. I'm going to fly in it whenever I want to, and the rest of you can shove it. McCain has championed campaign finance reform. Feh. He also there was also a clear statement on his part that he didn't plan to use his wife's wealth to help him in his campaign. Didn't plan it. Then he's not lying, because they didn't plan it. He just spontaneous. Hey, honey, I gotta fly to Podunk. Well, honey, take the jet. So it wasn't planned. She was just spontaneously generous with the Learjet. Yeah, that's how it is. Sure. Not. McCain used Cindy's jet. Hi, I'm Cindy. Fly me. McCain used Cindy's jet over a 7-month period starting last summer, almost exclusively for campaign trips. The campaign paid $241,149 for the trips, and that is far, far, far less than the cost of a normal charter. It's the McCain loophole, and you gotta love it. But every day we're gonna have more and more and more that shows just how crazy he is. Today, he kicked off, the McCain-Cheerian McCain that it did, kicked off his call to action tour. Oh, brother, who comes up with this? And he did so by touring Miami Children's Hospital. According to his campaign flax, Senator McCain-Cheerian McCain did it, met and listened to some of its young patients and their parents. Yeah, I'll bet you those parents were hand-selected, too, because I know I can speak with real authority that he'd be having one of his famous temper tantrums if it was my kid in the Miami Children's Hospital. And I got to look at him and say, you dirty, rotten, filthy SOB, why did you vote against the nerve of you? The nerve, the gall of you. Voting against an expansion of the Children's Health Insurance Program. You go to hell, John McCain. Call to action. You were called to action, and you were not there. I think I hear Cindy calling me, or so. I think it's time for dinner at one of our 8 mansions. McCain says he's going to work to eliminate the worries over the availability and cost of health care. Work, 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 work. Hello, boys. Did you miss me? As president, I pledge to preserve the foundations that deliver innovation and hope to those who are in need of modern medicine. I will work to eliminate the worries over the availability and cost of health care that trouble the waking hours and disturb the sleep of more Americans than any other single domestic issue. I don't have time to count all those words, but I can tell you that there's a lot of them, and even though there's a bunch of words, there's very, very, very little in the way of meaning. There's no, as Gertrude Stein said, there's no there there. Trouble the waking hours and disturb the sleep. Maybe you should have been thinking about that, John, when you were sticking a knife into the heart of sick kids all over America by voting against the expansion of S-CHIP. Jesus, John, I'm a cigarette smoker. It would have hung an extra buck a pack on me. America's cigarette-smoking population was going to be personally responsible for taking care of America's sick children. And we were willing to. We just needed you to be a man, John, and not a tool. that you chose Tool and reported happily back to your lobbyist masters. Because for all that straight talk, Huey, you are corporate-owned and lobbyist-controlled and operated all the way from your shoelaces up to the top of your shiny little bald head. Why don't you call me the C-word, John? That's what you called your wife the last time she mentioned your shiny little bald head. As a smoker, I was willing to carry the cost of making sure that American parents did not have their waking hours troubled and their sleep disturbed by fears and worry and just gut-bending anxiety over where, how, if their kids were going to be able to be treated when they were sick. I was willing to do it, John McCain! The beer drinkers didn't have to pay for it. The pop drinkers didn't have to pay for it. The caviar eaters didn't have to pay for it. The gasoline users didn't have to pay for it. Just us smokers, John. And you screwed us, and you screwed the kids.
It's a call to action.
Pity is, the action is the action of, you know, screwing children! Remember, what John McCain helped put a knife in would have extended health care coverage to a big percentage of the 658,000 uninsured children that live in Florida alone. Even when McCain put a knife in it and protested it anyway, it made it to George Bush's desk, and he still vetoed it. And McCain came out and said, "And that was the right call by the president." So there at Miami Children's Hospital today, about 100 people, including pediatric residents, faculty members, and community parents, no, I'm sorry, I've got my dates wrong. This goes back to when George Bush spat on America's children in October. It was October 2nd when about 100 people, including pediatric residents, faculty members, and community parents, gathered at the School of Medicine to protest Bush's veto of the S-CHIP extension. Rallies were held at more than 30 other institutions, including Phoenix Children's Hospital, Miami Children's Hospital, and Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C. Today in Miami, you know what he addressed himself to? There at Miami Children's Hospital, where they deal with things like cancer, where they deal with the horrors of childhood illness. Well, today at Miami Children's Hospital, on the Call to Action tour, John McCain said, "I support public health programs to combat childhood obesity." That's right, the children are eating too much. They don't have a cancer problem. They don't have a toxic waste problem. No. America's children are fat and lazy. Lord, Lord, Lord. How can... I mean, even Repiglickens, how can they be so callous? Don't they realize that someday it could be them or theirs? We'll we'll have a little bit more on this campaign event when we come back. And, yeah, prepare to be profoundly offended, because it is pretty well sickening. And some clean coal news, too. You're going to love... Oh, you're just so going to love this. Clean coal. Darned if I can figure out what it means. And, of course, as much or more than anything else, your calls, your thoughts. Take the show where you want it to go. That's fine by me. Because I don't have a lock on stuff that matters when it comes to what we're paying attention to. You may have seen something that I haven't. We will be back in a few minutes. Little musical interlude. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Jumbo planes, taking a ride on a cosmic train. Switch on summer from a slot machine. Just get what you want to if you want, as you can get anything. I know we've come a long way. We're changing day to day. But tell me, where do the children play? Well, you roll on roads over fresh green grass. Your lorry loads pumping petrol gas, and you make them long and you make them tough, but they just go on and on, and it seems that you can't get off. Oh, I know we've come a long way. We're changing day to day, but tell me, where do the children play? Children play.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
All right. Let's do another hour. Get Monday off. Off the clock. Jesus. Get Monday off the plate and let me start thinking about Tuesday. Also coming up in an hour, a little less than an hour, Strictly Confidential, the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program with the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host, Peter Godbold, with a really, really nifty conversation coming for you. Bob will be learning to dial transatlantically. I don't do that very often, so I'm just hoping I don't screw it up. You know a little secret? Peter's hoping I don't screw it up even more than I am, as you can well imagine. So that is on the way. I promised you a little bit of follow-up on the McCain-Turian candidate, because some stuff you just can't... the campaign event that I mentioned that John, the McCain-Turian candidate, attended today at Miami Children's Hospital, where he toured and met some of the facility's young patients. He heard the story of Jake. Jake's a 9-year-old child with a cleft palate. A fairly simple bit of surgery corrects a cleft palate. Jake's father, however, told the McCain-Turian candidate that his family's been struggling to get their insurance company to cover the operation Jake needs. Well, why, Jake's dad? Why are you having problems? The McCain-Turian candidate would tell you that for-profit health care is the way to go in America. Since there were cameras rolling, McCain nodded intently. Unfortunately, under the health, he also didn't tell Jake's dad that under the health care plan the McCain-Turian candidate has put forward, Jake wouldn't be covered. Oopsie. Because a cleft palate would, of course, be a pre-existing condition. And under the McCain-Turian candidate's McHealth care plan, pre-existing conditions aren't covered. What's more, dig it, under the McCain plan, the already broad leeway that private for-profit insurance carriers have to tell American children and American adults to go themselves, as Dick Cheney would say, gets even broader. John McCain actually believes that we're being too rough on insurance companies as it is. You remember the young woman who died for want of a liver transplant in California? At the last minute, when everybody was pretty sure she was going to die, the insurance company did come out and say, "Well, she can have the operation. Oh, she's dead. Oh, too bad." Now they do that. Under McCain's plan, they wouldn't even have to do that. They could just go, "Eh, die, kid." His plan would leave many of the 158 million Americans who get health care through their jobs, you know, employer-provided health care, at risk of losing their coverage. McCain's health care advisor, Douglas Holtz-Eakin, Holtz-Eakin has a hyphen in the middle, by the way. That means he's really important. Wouldn't even answer the question as to whether the plan would guarantee coverage for little Jake. He just said that McCain will address the issue in his speech tomorrow. You know, there are horses' asses in this world, And then there are people who are such asses that to call them a horse's ass is entirely entirely too slanderous to the horse. Hint, John McCain's one of those. I promised you some fun, clean coal stuff. Well, guess what? All those pageants on CNN that were all sponsored by Clean Coal Technology, America's energy future. Those ads have paid off. They've paid off in particular with a CNN correspondent by the name of Ali Velshi. You know, I don't think there aren't enough dirty words to account for how obscene what you're about to hear is. This is dirtier than any flashed breast on any halftime show. This is dirtier than any so-called obscene word that has ever been uttered by any human being. Give a listen.
There are issues with coal. It's not the cleanest thing in the world. You see those signs for clean coal, 99% clean. I'm not 99% clean when I get out of the shower. We are going to be showing you the whole... I just look clean. We're going to have the whole interview with Pat Davies and some interesting things about making gasoline out of coal on Your Money this weekend, Saturdays at 1 p.m. and Sunday at 3 p.m.
Three letters for you, TMI.
About not being 99% clean when I got out of the shower?
Thanks. But as a byproduct of squeezing the coal, do you also get diamonds?
Squeeze really hard.
I'm not even as clean as coal when I get out of the shower. And, of course, the guy that he was talking about interviewing was the CEO of a company called Sasol. What does Sasol do? Why, Sasol has updated old Nazi technology to turn coal into liquid fuels. Like I said, all those ads paid off. Because that's what all that America's energy future BS is about. Is foisting off the idea that we'll use 4 gallons of clean, fresh water to produce 1 gallon of liquid coal. Those 4 gallons of water will never be able to be rehabilitated or cleaned up. And meanwhile, the coal will come from mountaintop removal operations. And communities all over Appalachia and the upper American West will be devastated. People will be made sick. I'm not 99% clean when I got out of the shower. Ali Velshi, you coal whore, you. You're not 99% clean any time of your life. You're covered up in coal, and coal is poison, Ali. But you're too stupid to realize that you're being whored out. Coal use has more than tripled since 1970. Total pollution from coal plants has gone up. The Clean Air Task Force found in 2004 that coal-fired plant pollution cuts short the lives of nearly 24,000 people every year. And for these monsters, it's not enough. Need more dead. Need more sick. Let's go to the phones. Ah, now see, if you dial in, you got to wait for a minute. That just makes me a little bit crazy, but no. By the way, this Ali Velshi creep has been whoring for coal on numerous occasions there on Chicken Noodle News. Doing everything he can to keep people from realizing just exactly how desperately filthy, disgusting coal truly is. What did he say in this Your Money show that he did? He introduced his interview with Pat Davies, the CEO of Sasol that I mentioned a minute ago. He said, "Any way you slice it, prices at the pump are high, even if you stick with regular gas. One innovative energy company based in South Africa thinks it has a workable solution. For decades, it's been turning coal and natural gas into gasoline. Oh, yummy! I had some on my cornflakes just today." Now, it turns out that the coal-to-liquids technology that Sasol is hustling is neither workable, as Velshi said, nor is it any sort of a solution to high gasoline prices. And they, of course, couldn't quite find their way to telling anything resembling real truth about what coal does to make the climate crisis even worse. Don't take my word for it, though. Listen to them yourself.
Of course, any way you slice it, prices at the pump are high, even if you stick with the regular gas. One innovative energy company based in South Africa thinks it has a workable solution. For decades, it's been turning coal and natural gas into gasoline. I recently sat down with the company's CEO, Pat Davies, and asked him to explain how Sasol does it. To me, this is not about lowering the cost necessarily of gasoline. It is about creating alternatives, and particularly coal is something you don't eat, unlike corn, which makes ethanol. Sasol is looking to open some facilities here in the United States, and it's conducting feasibility studies, so it would take years before the first coal to gasoline fuel could possibly enter the U.S. market.
But they're busting their butts every day. By the way, clean coal people coughed up something like $400,000 last year to lobbyists to promote the clean coal hustle, and millions upon millions of dollars to sponsor the pageants, both Democratic and Republican, on CNN. Yeah, there's a con going on here. By the way, as you contemplate what you're going to do with that big old stimulus check, you might want to consider this. Americans are changing the very definition of how they what they consider to be a necessity, because they are sticking to necessities as the economy goes swirling down the toilets. Evidence of that in Starbucks. Profits have been off for Starbucks since late 2007, and their earnings report last week was down 11% from what they expected. It was down 11% because people can't afford a $5 latte anymore. According to the New York Times, spending data and interviews around the country show that middle and working class consumers are starting to switch from name brands to cheaper alternatives, to eat in instead of dining out, and to fly at unusual hours to shave dollars off airfares. Wally World reports stronger than usual sales of peanut butter and spaghetti. Domino's Pizza and Ruby Tuesday restaurants have suffered a fall off in orders because America can't go out to the restaurants anymore. Then there's the study by WSL Strategic Retail. Fashion accessories, home decor items, premium brands or food and specialty coffees, eating at restaurants and takeout foods, and tickets to entertainment are the top areas where people are trimming their spending. That kind of makes sense because they can't trim their gasoline spending because they can't quit work. God, I can't imagine how infuriated I would be if I lived in some major metropolitan area and I had to sit in the middle of a freeway with my engine running going nowhere every day. Just having the gas burn. Oh, I'd be doing the angry dance on the hood of my car before, you know, a couple of weeks went by. So you gotta buy the gasoline, you gotta pay the power bill, you gotta pay the gas bill, you gotta pay the stuff that it takes to keep a home going, gotta make the mortgage payment, gotta pay, all the, the car insurance premiums come due, dear, and what are we gonna do about the homeowners, and, oh, damn, the air conditioner just went out. Well, we'll sweat this summer. So where the hell else are you gonna cut cost? So much for that vacation. So much for eating out once a week. So much for eating steak. Now it's hamburger, and the people that were glad to have the hamburger are down to rice and beans. And even that's going through the roof cost-wise. Don't worry, though. Because, you see, not everybody's suffering. No. Sales of true luxury goods, jewelry, private jets, contemporary art, expensive real estate, yachts, are higher than ever before, baby! Even though their prices keep going up, too. The sales are going up right along with them. The luxury market in some areas is actually setting records. In Manhattan this year, for instance, 71 $10 million apartments have sold thus far. Only 17 were sold last year. Guess why? Shall we connect the dots? Shall we make sense out of all this? The middle and lower classes are suffering so that the luxury pigs can spend money on $10 million apartments. Women, this is a quote, women or their husbands who are buying this jewelry say to a certain extent, if we have the money, if we don't buy it now, the price is only going up, so we have to. Muffy, you can't continue to wear that embarrassing 3-carat diamond. Darling. Perhaps we could, I don't know, have something done with it and put it with one of your other 3-carat diamonds and a couple of the 2-carat diamonds into a passingly tolerable tiara. But I simply insist that you have a new 5-carat diamond for your hand. And, of course, the gap is widening between the well-off and the rest of us. The wealthiest 10% of America account for more than half of all U.S. consumer spending. That's a little... In other words... The wealthiest 10% of America buys half the stuff. The other 90% buys the other half. Figure that out and see if a little bit of acid doesn't come up into the back of your throat. Dag gum. That's some nauseating math. Think Progress is reporting that what I said earlier is correct. I mean, they're not naming me or anything, God knows. But where the stimulus checks are concerned, guess what? It's going overseas and it's going into the gas tank. The U.S. Energy Information Administration says that the price for an average gallon of gas will increase by 40 cents a gallon this year. That means it'll cost an extra $231 to fuel a car in 2008. That's a third of the rebate check for an average single middle-income person, $231. It's $462 if you assume an American family with two cars. That's a quarter. That's more than 25% of their rebate. On the other hand, if it doesn't find its way into the gas tank, the rebate will, in fact, wind up going overseas to mainly Asian manufacturers of stuff we don't need in the first place. Sometimes it sucks being right all the time. Okay, not all the time. My ego's not that big. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Dave.
Up in Northern Cal. And, you know, it occurs to me more and more that exploitation and greed has just taken over and is dominating. Wherever there is power, they have grabbed it. And it strikes me that they are harming the planet on which they live, that they are devastating the planet on which they live. You know, it's like, do they have a backup plan? If they kill the environment of this country, where do they plan to live?
Oh, they'll be able to afford to build biodomes. It'll be just like Logan's Run.
Biodomes.
No, gated communities, you know, again, as I've said before, they never put the coal mine or the industrial polluting plant next door to the rich folks' mansions. This stuff doesn't touch them. You know, these same numbers, look, they're out there buying jets and $10 million apartments and great big honking blood diamonds. They don't feel this. Everything is still great for them. And they don't give a damn what happens to us.
No, it seems like they're one of several groups that just don't think it through, that don't see the end result of their behaviors. I don't know.
Some of them aren't. Look, they're just because they are extremely moneyed, Dave, does not mean that they are extremely intelligent. There is no correlation between the two. Or else, you know, folks like you, me, and most of the people who listen to the horn would be billionaires. But there isn't a correlation, and so these people are, you know, straight out of the fable of the grasshopper and the ant. And we're the ants, and we're out here, and we're busting our butts, and you know, trying to make sure that we get through the winter, and yada yada yada. And the moneyed class, the 10% the 10% of the people who have 50% of the stuff, fly in every August and eat everything that we've gathered for ourselves.
Well, you know, it's a combination. It's more than just the simple view. I'm sure that there is, you know, there is something that says, I want as everything. I want to just take all that I can, and I really don't care how many I harm in this process. You know,
see, I think I'm not arguing with you, but I think there's a flaw in the way you're viewing it, Dave, because you actually think that these people think about it. They don't. We don't exist to them. The Earth doesn't exist. They're like I'm sure you're familiar with Plato's Republic, right?
Yes.
Okay, you know the people in the cave? They're the people in the cave. They can't conceive of an external reality beyond their little world.
Single dimension, huh?
Yeah. All they see are shadows of what they perceive reality to be.
You know, they take the time to plot. They've had their Carlyle groups and their PNACs and their Bergerbos, whatever, you know, the powers that have sat it out and thought out all these creative deceptions of how they're going to sell their horror product. So they're putting some thought into it. I mean, you can't do that much deception without some kind of a primitive intelligence at work. You know, they managed to actually convince a significant percentage of the people in this country and perhaps on this planet that they're a part of a good thing by voting for the McCains and the Bushes, you know, that they are somehow going to benefit from listening to Rush and voting as he wants them to, you know.
Right. Well, but see, that's because it's a de-intellectualized process when you tune in one of these right-wing hate mongers. You really cannot listen with brain engaged. You have to feel. You can't think. You know, the Flimball was on the air ballyhooing today, Dave, about the Supreme Court decision. You know what he said?
No.
He said, I got it right here. Give me just a second.
I was so happy.
No, he said, "My friends, this is a huge, huge, huge move forward to undercut Democrat efforts to commit voter fraud this fall."
Huh.
Even the majority opinion in this case, Dave, said that there was not one case of voter fraud that the state could even identify.
Ah, but there was. You forget Ann Coulter.
Yeah, but she didn't do it in Indiana.
Oh, that's right. That's right. But at least we had one clear-cut case of trying to register and vote in two different places.
So the Supreme Court hustled this decision out so that it could be there just in time for the primary next week in Indiana. Who do you think this will benefit in the Democratic primary in Indiana? Who's going to benefit from this?
Won't benefit. Those that have...
No, but of the two candidates. Who benefits by first-time voters and people who are too poor to have a driver's license? Who benefits either Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, do you suppose?
I would say those two as opposed to... Oh, Hillary Clinton and John McCain as opposed to Barack Obama, I think.
Bingo.
They seem to have their attachments to these big corporate special interests and try to cover for them and clean up behind them. And I guess to a large degree, Obama has his own hand out. I think those who were most likely to try to act in the interest of the people got eliminated early. And I, for one, do believe that if not voter fraud, election fraud is a reality.
Yeah, election fraud is a reality. Voter fraud is not an issue. This voter fraud BS is something that the Republicans came up with to counter to keep America from actually seeing what they're doing to the electoral process.
Right. Well, you caused me to have to start rethinking. It hadn't really actually struck me that they were operating on some sort of a primeval... they were not... I felt that thought was somehow a part of it, that they must be thinking of what they're doing, as opposed to just the pure animal instinct that seems to be driving them.
I think there's probably some sort of... endorphin, serotonin, whatever, you know, that stuff that gets released in your brain when you suddenly realize that you've got four aces in a poker game and you break out in a sweat and you can't get the pot up to where you want it. The runner's high that happens, the stuff that, you know, people who power shop get this adrenaline thing going at the idea of spending money, spending money, spending money, spending money, spending money. And that's all that matters.
Right.
You know, I actually physically saw Diamond Fever one time. And I'd always heard about it, and I thought it was a joke. And I was with a young lady many, many years ago when the world was young, and we had ridden to a jewelry store in the back of a dinosaur, Dave. And just for the fun of it, she asked to see this great big humongous 3-carat diamond solitaire. And he took it out of the case because we were respectable looking, you know. And she put it on her finger. Her heart rate went up. Sweat broke out on her forehead. Her breathing became faster. All of this involuntarily, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen it happen out in the woods during deer season when a young fella who's never taken a deer will get a buck in his sights. And around here, they call that buck fever.
You know, I have to wonder if there would be enough payoff to induce good people into going that way. And that is to say, if you or I, if we suddenly found we could afford a mansion in Hollywood and a mansion in Maui, and we could afford a luxury jet to take us back and forth to our various mansions, and have limousines waiting at both sites, and physicians and specialists to travel with us, is at some point that all that weighs enough that we could say, to hell with all the people that are being hurt, or just tune them out. Just don't even think about that.
I don't know. I can't imagine. I have enough trouble, Agnes and I do, running this house. And the added headache of trying to maintain my father's house in Alabama, I can't imagine what it would even with unlimited money and all you got to do is write the check. It's still time that you got to take out of your life to write the check, and it's a pain in the butt to even think about. It's consumerism, Dave. It's a real, you know, these people aren't Christians or Jewish or Buddhist or Hindu or Muslim. They're consumerists. They worship their stuff. They define themselves by their stuff. Oh, I couldn't believe it. We went to the most lovely little garden party out in the Hamptons last week, darling. And they had these little lark's vomit canapes, and I was transported. You know, it's like that. We're talking about an entire culture of the howls.
One thing that becomes clearer and clearer is that such people could never get themselves in positions of power in anything that calls itself a democracy. When people can have any view of what they are voting for out there, would they put in place those who would do this to us? Would they? And if they did, would they not come to see it, and come time for re-election, would they not be all promptly gone? Election fraud, yes, that is a big part of the master plan. They're there because they know how to cheat, and that...
Sure it is, but part and parcel of that, it's easier to do election fraud the smaller the numbers are. So if you can just keep the people that you consider to be a pain in your electoral butt out of the process altogether with something like this voter ID business, it just makes their job simpler.
Yeah. Well, you know, I called you with a simple thought, and you've caused me to do a lot of thinking, Bob, and I'm going to do that. I don't want to burden you your time while I'm doing it, but, you know, mine was simply, how do these exploitive goons destroy that which they are living on? How are they going to pollute with their coals and their oils, the rivers, the lakes, the oceans? How are they going to destroy all that, and then where do they plan to live? That was what was in my head when I thought, well, I'm going to ask that about. They don't think about that. Now I got to think about that.
Hey, but we're thinking. That's what we do.
Yeah.
You know, somebody's got to, because sadly, You know, as the good book says, there will come a day when they shall yell, "Lord, Lord." And you know what? Being the decent people that we are, we'll haul their ass out of the fire at the same time we're hauling our own.
I won't give them a high priority myself.
I know. I know the feeling. Dave, have a great evening.
Thank you, Bob.
Sure thing. Bye now. Our pal Dave in Northern California. This just in, power does a job on neurons. Being whisked away by a driver through the crowd of onlookers is wonderful. Yeah. Yeah. And and when you've got unlimited money to spend and you can go in and just look at something and say, "I want it," and it becomes yours. I can't imagine that crack or meth or any other drug is more profound than that. And then if you're part of the process and you can look at others and say, for instance, in the case of John McCain, "I'm using my wife's jet and there's not a damn thing you can do about it. Eat it." Because he's petty and he's hateful and he's vindictive, and that gives that, and that, you know, for a sociopath like McCain, that gives him a charge too. Sure it does. Sure it does. Oh, let's see. We're running out of time, dadgummit. But a couple of things just to sort of hit along the way. You did note last week that two of America's biggest retailers have begun rationing rice. Costco and Sam's Club, limiting the amount of rice that people can purchase in their stores. The Costco spokesman statement said, "We don't want to create a panic where we don't think there is a panic. If we weren't able to get any more rice or any more flour, that would be a different story, but we're able to continue to replenish our supplies." Oh, okay. So this is just prudence? Since when does the retail business engage in prudence? The restaurant industry's profits really have gone in the tank, as I mentioned earlier. Folks in kitchens are trying to figure out a way to cut corners, and, you know, that drives a real live, honest-to-God chef just nuts. Restaurant owners are cutting back on sauces. "I want some extra gravy with that." Tough! They're cutting down their portion sizes. They're charging extra for condiments. And they're going to places like Costco and Sam's Club for their bulk items like their rice and their flour instead of letting delivery companies bring it to them. I didn't even know there was a USA Rice Federation, but there is one. And they say it's possible that small restaurants and bodega-type neighborhood stores may be purchasing rice in larger quantities than they do typically to avoid higher prices. Hence the scarcity at Walmart and Costco that they say isn't a scarcity, but they're still limiting purchases, so you know that there's a scarcity. Big darkness soon come. Big darkness soon come. Oh, yeah, with about 15 minutes left in the program, let's finish off on one of our favorite people. As I noted last Thursday, Antonin Fat Tony Scalia, Tony the Torturer Scalia, Tortuous Tony, was on 60 Minutes this week with the first granted taped interview in something like 22 years on the court. And last Thursday, I played you the clip where he says that, get over it. Get over it. Where the 2000 theft of the election was concerned. And the coup d'etat that the Supreme Court supported and helped engineer. Well, it turns out Leslie Stahl on Sunday evening on 60 Minutes also asked the sleazoid Scalia about torture. Yeah, torture. Hear it for yourself. Hear his words. Don't want anybody thinking that I'm twisting anything that this fascist monster, son of a fascist, has to say.
The justice has been explaining his positions publicly more and more, and even delving into some thorny issues, like torture.
I don't like torture. Although defining it is going to be a nice trick, but I mean, who's in favor of it? Nobody. And we have a law against torture. But if everything that is hateful and odious is not covered by some provision of the Constitution.
If someone's in custody.
Jesus. No, everything that's hateful and odious isn't covered. We've just got a blanket statement that was understood by men, you know, a couple of hundred years ago as meaning don't do it, when they said that there would be no cruel and unusual punishment. But see, that doesn't fly with Fat Tony.
Custody. As in Abu Ghraib, and they are brutalized by a law enforcement person. If you listen to the expression, cruel and unusual punishment, doesn't that apply?
Now, you've got to sit back and wait for this, because this is going to make you tear your clothes off and run naked around the room just screaming your little head off. You want to hear logic taken out behind the barn and just beaten to death? Tortured logic? You want to hear tortured logic? Here's some tortured logic.
No, an unusual punishment.
To the contrary, you think that you would. Has anybody ever referred to torture as punishment? I don't think so.
Well, I think if you're in.
Oh! Lordy! So. The constitutional ban on cruel and unusual punishment doesn't ban torture because torture isn't deemed punishment. Now I've got to put my foot in the bucket and sing. Ouch! That just makes my head hurt. Does it make your head hurt? It makes my head ache. Of course torture is punishment. Torture is punishment, for the love of God, for not giving up information that the torturee is perceived to possess by the torturer. In other words, I will punish your ass until you give me the information that I'm telling you you have and that I want, even if you don't have the information. But you see, Scalia can't go down that road. Because Scalia is religiously insane. Scalia is a member of an organization that thinks that the Inquisition was really pretty cool. Scalia is a member of an organization whose founder, who is a flippin' saint, thought Hitler got a raw deal from the world because, in his words, he couldn't possibly have killed 6 million Jews, only no more than 4 million. How? Scalia's daddy was honest to God, professor of Romance languages at Brooklyn College. He was, honest to God, a member of the Italian-American Fascist Organization. Little membership cards and certificates suitable for framing and oaths that you swear to Benito Mussolini. Of course torture is punishment.
torture is punishment rendered by the judge, jury, and executioner, all embodied in the one individual who is doing the torture. What a nutcase!
Custody, and you have a policeman who's taken you into custody.
And you say he's punishing you?
Sure.
What's he punishing you for? You punish
somebody.
Well,
because he assumes you one, either committed a crime or that you know something that he wants to know.
It's the latter. And when he's hurting you in order to get information from you,
yeah.
You don't say he's punishing you.
Yes, I do! Yes, I do! It is punishment for not giving up information. Hell, Tony, ask John McCain if he felt like he was being punished. You could play a clip from Dr. Strangelove for this freak and maybe... But no, there's none so blind as those who will not see. It's not torture for Scalia, because that way he can continue to say, well, we have a law against torture, but every kind of odious conduct is certainly doesn't constitute torture. This guy is another one of those educated derelicts that... One of the sayings of my old fraternity refers to. Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. This is 2008. And we've got a man on the Supreme Court, part of a majority on the Supreme Court, that for all intents and purposes thinks it's 1408. See, in Fat Tony's world, if you burnt the witches, even though, you know, rational world, that kind of stuff, if we were burning witches or pressing heretics, trying to get them confess to being either heretics or witches, that wouldn't constitute cruel and unusual. Sorry, cruel or unusual punishment. Welcome to the America that Tony Scalia's daddy dreamed of building, and for whom his son has laid a great number of the cornerstones. And nobody even has the nerve to stand up in the Congress and call for this fat freak's impeachment. Meanwhile, America continues. Now we've got a Supreme Court justice who says that torture isn't punishment. But we've got America is eaten up with the words of Reverend Jeremiah Wright. Our buddy David in South Carolina says, Bob, I must be totally crazy, for I can't see what Reverend Wright said that is not true. Even Olbermann suggests that Obama needs to get rid of this problem. It can't be words. I think Cheney let loose multiple F-bombs and Shrub used it on an open mic when he ran. McNutt sang Bomb, 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 Iran, and it was no big deal. All these certified lunatics from the religious right met with and endorsed Bush, but I don't recall such an uproar. Reverend Wright spoke the truth, and white people just don't or won't get it. Why is he talked about like he's such an evil person? Bush and Cheney are responsible for over 1 million deaths, yet they aren't vilified by the media. It's got to be racism, pure and simple. I'm disgusted. David says, I'm from South Carolina, so I am adept at reading racism. The talking heads keep saying what a huge issue this is for Obama. Why? Because they say it is. They say it over and over and over and over. These are all white people talking about how dangerous Reverend Wright is. Gas is over $4 a gallon. We're in two wars, no jobs, no houses, no food, and the only thing on the news is constant coverage of a pastor. Shows where our priorities are. Thanks, David. I think you just said what I was getting at a hell of a lot better than I was saying, than I was getting at what I was saying. So that's the program tonight. Thanks, everybody, for joining in. Thanks for your kind words. Thanks for your financial support of the network. Thank you. As I said before, you humble me. Thanks to our dear friends at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, who bring you the programs on the horn every day. Thank you. Be part of the solution by going to crmw.net and joining up. Coming up, Peter Godbold. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
America and good morning, world. Welcome to book chapter and verse 136 of this crazy little thing called love that we formally refer to as Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, exclusively right here on listener-supported Head On Radio Network. Also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's Coal River Mountain Watch at crmw.net. Stop by Coal River Mountain Watch and see what mountaintop removal is doing to West Virginia. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Monday, April 28, 2008. So if you're listening shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern Time on April the 28th of 2008, you're indeed listening to a live show, and you're welcome to call in and participate with myself and the guest whom I'll be introducing shortly. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com. And there you're going to find links to all of the guests as well as the audio archives from past shows. You'll find links to our chat room. It's a good night to stop by and join the chat. There are links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page and links to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. You'll find links there also to the Head On Radio Network's main site. And there you can find out about all the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network as well as the PayPal button to make it easier for you to support the Head On Radio Network. The toll-free line is 877, the number 4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-4-HEAD-ON. If you have unlimited long distance, we encourage you to use that and save the studio a nickel or buck, but either way, we're glad to take your calls. The toll line is area code 304-658-3333. That's 304-658-3333, and that rings in West Virginia. Email arrives to Peter at headonradionetwork.com, and I do try to check the email during the breaks. Now, if you are listening to one of the podcasts, as so many of the listeners do, we are glad to have you participate in the show by dropping us an email after the fact, and if you'd like to have anything forwarded to the guest, we're glad to take care of it that way. Our guest this evening, and Bob is bringing the guest on and contacting the guest as I speak. It's 2 o'clock in the morning, her time. Actually, it took a while to figure that out because of the various daylight savings time and when was daylight savings time instituted in the United Kingdom, and looking these things up on the Internet. We finally figured out.